book of Job. It's in the Old Testament, book of Job. And I want to take this morning to sort of just, in a sense, introduce it. And it sort of falls out of some of the sort of the major questions that we ask. Now, Job, opposite of Philippians, which only has four chapters, this one has 42 chapters. Philippians is a letter. Job is a bit of a poetic book. But it's a story. In fact, let me just start this morning by just kind of, in a sense, telling you at least the story that falls out of the first chapter of Job. It's lengthy as a book, but everything marches out of this story that comes out of the first chapter. Now, one day, many years ago, there was a man named Job who was living in the land of Uz, not to be confused with the land of Oz, but he was living in that land, and he happened to be a very wealthy man. In our standards of wealth, we would look at it, how many pieces of property we might own, how big our bank accounts are, you know, how well suited for not just retirement, but for luxurious living that we might have in our days ahead. And it would have been marked out by all the different kind of parts and pieces of things that we possessed, right? You can see it with nice cars, nice homes, nice land, nice vacation homes, nice boats, nice things, great businesses that accumulate a lot, people who work for us, a lot of people who work for us, who help their work accumulates into and translates into our increasing of our own wealth. That's really the story of this particular guy named Job. He had a lot. But more than just having a lot, he really was a man who was blameless. He, as it says, he feared God and he stayed away from evil. In other words, even with all of his wealth, he lived in reverent awe of the Almighty God. Which doesn't often happen, by the way, if you think about wealth and how that sometimes can accumulate into our lives. But in his case, he did. He lived in fear of God, and he tried really hard to live the straight and narrow kind of a life. In fact, he would not only offer sacrifices for himself frequently, but he had sons and daughters. He had seven sons and three daughters who really all seemed to love God in the same way. But when they would get together, he not only cared so much for his well-being and offer sacrifices, but he would offer sacrifices for them as well, in a sense to say, God, I realize that this sacrifice doesn't totally make things right, but it does help me understand how desperately we are all in need of you. That's what a sacrifice really did. In fact, in those days, the sacrificial system, so to speak, was built to kind of help us all understand how desperate we were in need of God. Job totally realized that, totally knew that. As I said, he had, part of his wealth was that he had a great family. As we said, seven sons and their families, three daughters and their families. And they often got together. They actually liked each other, which is a bonus, right, for large families. They all got along. This was a family that really, really was highly respected by the community, totally loved by each other, cared for other people. They cared for them. They contributed highly. Everything, honestly, was going great. He, in his possessions, he was the owner of 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 teams of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and servants galore to take care and manage and help manage all the possessions that he had. One wealthy man. Well, the story goes that one day the heavenly council got together. Now, don't go too far with the heavenly council just yet, okay? Don't jump the gun on me. But the heavenly council got together to sort of survey the earth and all of the human beings on the earth and all of the whereabouts of everything that was happening upon the earth. And God got together with his counsel, and Satan happened to come by. And God, the Almighty God, turned to Satan and said, "Have you looked at the earth and observed all these people out there on the earth? Let me tell you about the one. Have you seen Job? You know, have you considered him? Have you looked at his life? Look at what a man like who he is, and how he still, even with all of his wealth, he fears God and loves me and stays in deep relationship with me no matter what. And stays away from evil." Well, Satan turned to God and said, "Well, of course, duh. You know, why wouldn't he fear you and love you and respect you and be willing to stay close to you? Look at all of what you've done for him. The guy has everything that he needs. You know, you've blessed him beyond measure." As we say in the, as some people say, I didn't say this, but in the South they used to say, "Hey, look how you blessed his socks off," right? You know, look how wonderful his life is. He's got things, possessions, servants. He's in no need of anything. You know, you have just continued to give him and give him and bless him and bless him. Look how wonderful he is. Take it away, and I don't think he would. So God said, "Okay, tell you what. Here's what I'm going to let you do. I'm going to let you perform a test on Job's life. And I'm going to let you strike," in the first chapter, "strike all of the things, possessions, and people around Job, and all those things that he has accumulated, and you can do what you want to with him, with those things, but don't," first chapter, "don't touch his life. Don't touch him. But all those things he has out there, you can do what you want." The test was made. Well, the storm hit. Job and normal reports of things going well and business and all the things around him, literally in a parade of things that took place, while his brothers and sisters were all together, or his sons and daughters were all together in a feast together with their families at their oldest brother's house, a man ran into Job's place and said, "Job, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but the Sabians," which is an enemy tribe of people, "the Sabians came and they stole all the animals and all the servants that are out there. They've taken everything, and I was the only one that escaped, and I'm here to report to you this incredibly bad news." Verse 14, 15. And right on the heels of that taking place, another servant ran in and said, "Oh, I'm so horrified to report this to you, but a fire came down out of the heavens, and all of those 500 sheep you had, those 7,000 sheep you had, they were all burned up, and all of the shepherds with them perished." Gone. Right on the heels of that happening, another servant ran in to report this, that the Chaldeans, which is another tribe of enemy tribes, so to speak, nearby, that tribe had three bands of Chaldean people that came in and they stole all of your camels and killed all of the servants that were in charge of those camels. And I was the only one that escaped, and I'm here to report to you this horrible news. And then the last one, maybe the most horrific, it was the most horrific of all, is it one of the servants ran in the door and said, "Oh, Job, I'm sorry to tell you. I'm horrified to tell you. But while your sons and daughters were all together feasting at the oldest brother's house, a powerful wind came up, a storm came up, and ripped through town and hit that house. And it collapsed. And everyone on the inside was killed. And I was the only one that escaped. I'm here to report this to you." One after another. Crisis, horrific tragedy, crisis, horrific tragedy. The worst news that you could get. Job's response? Well, first thing he did is he shaved his head, which was not in the modern world trying to look like Rich Long, all right? Or me, or Don Turner. It really was a sign of incredible grief, incredible sorrow, incredible sense of tragedy that took place. Horrified. A bit of a sign also of giving it up in that sense. But it was, I have nothing else to really give. All is lost. But then his next response was, I think, one of the more powerful of all. In the book of Job, chapter 1, verse 21, it says these words. After hearing all the horrible news, after getting all the horrifying stories that took place, and Job turned back to God and said, well, naked I have come into this world. I have come from my mother's womb into this world. And naked one day I will depart. The Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. The Lord has given, and the Lord has now taken away. But may the name of the Lord be praised. Job, chapter 1, verse 21. The introductory story. There's a song that we often sing in our church that's become really quite popular. We've been singing it for years and years and years, ever since it really became a pretty popular song in the Christian radio world. We sing it all the time. It's sung all over the world today in multiple languages all over the world. And it's become a great piece of music, become very, very familiar to us. In fact, so familiar that actually a lot of us consider this song as sort of a happy Jesus song. You know happy Jesus song is, hey, come in and be happy, Jesus, Jesus, happy, happy, happy. Love you, God, hey, 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 rah, rah, rah. You know, let's pass the offering and go home. And sometimes this song is sort of treated that way because it's just sort of upbeat. We forget that this song, the reality of this song is it comes out of this incredible tragedy. The song comes out of the book of Job and the story of the life of Job and the tragedies that unfold not only in his life, it unfolded not only in his life, but also often unfolds in our lives as well. You may know the name of the song. What is it? Blessed be your name. Blessed be your name. And how many times we do sing this song? Upbeat, get Ted Kramer to rock out on the guitar, and drummers will go, and here we go, blessed be the name, and you know, hey, 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 happy, happy Jesus. Think about this. Look at those words. Eric, would you mind? Let's just put the words of the song up here. In fact, let's just sing part of it. Blessed be your name in the land that is plentiful, in the streams of abundance flow. Blessed be your name. And now the next line. And blessed be your name when I'm found in the desert place, though I walk through the wilderness, blessed be your name. Every blessing you pour out of, turn back to praise. And when the darkness closes in, Lord, still I will say, blessed be the name of the Lord. Blessed be your name. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Blessed be your glorious name. You give and take away. You give and take away. My heart will choose to say, Lord, blessed be your name. One more. You give and take away. You give and take away.
my heart will choose to say, Lord, blessed be your name.
Isn't that amazing? Blessed be your name. Blessed be your name. When I'm found in the desert place, when I'm walking through the wilderness, when I get the news that the Chaldeans had come and robbed me of everything that I possessed, when I am struck down in those places of life, and it feels like I am destroyed, I could trade that in and ultimately say to you, blessed be your name. Next time you sing that song, I want you to remember the story of Job. And then ask yourself the very same question. Am I in a moment of tragedy? In a moment of incredibly horrific, horrible news? Am I willing to say, and can I say, may the name of the Lord be praised. Naked I come into this world. Naked I came from my mother's womb, and when I depart, I will still have nothing. And while I'm here on this earth for this period of time, there are times when I will have some things, but there are times in the wilderness. There are times when I will be blessed with items, things, and accumulations and comforts, but there are times when I will absolutely have no place to lay my head. But in it all, no matter what, blessed be the name of the Lord. That's a great song. It's a great song because it's an incredibly godly truth. What about the book of Job? Just take a back up just a minute and just talk about Job for a second. Job is I have never in my life taught out of the book of Job. You ever taught out of the book of Job? All right, you're one up on me. There you go. I was hoping I was one up on you, but there you are. I don't remember. Oh, let me put it this way. I don't remember teaching out of the book of Job. And I don't think anybody has any of my sermon tapes out there on the past of the book of Job. No, I seriously, I don't think I've ever taught out of the book of Job. Do what? I retract that statement. I have preached out of the book of Job before, but it's been a long, long time. And the book of Job is an interesting book. It's so different. You know, again, we're studying, and we'll continue this summer to teach out of the book of Philippians. Philippians is a letter that Paul wrote from a prison cell, and he wrote it to this church people, and he has some wonderful things to say about it. He had some warnings for sure along the way, but he had some wonderful things to say. Job is really pretty depressing. And it's not a letter, it's just a long play, sort of. That actually falls out of this event and the next one that's to follow in chapter 2. It's written not as a letter. It's actually almost written as poetry. It's really what we call in the Old Testament wisdom literature. And it falls about true wisdom in that sense, but it's written as a story to begin, but it's kind of a poem that sort of follows. Now, it is a real story. I am thoroughly, totally, and completely convinced that it is a real story of a real man named Job that had a wife and had children and had wealth and had all these things happen, and then it was all struck away from him. But sometimes the way it's written in sort of play fashion, it's sort of taken as, well, it's not a real story. Well, it is a real story about Job, but I can also tell you, Job or no Job, either way, this stuff happens. I mean, this kind of stuff absolutely happens in people's lives. It happens today, and it happened thousands of years ago. And we have forever questioned why this kind of thing takes place to us. Why do good things happen to, or bad things happen to good people? Why does it, don't we have a cause and effect kind of a thing? Why do these things take place? We have three people from our church this week in the hospital. As best I can count right now, two of them are still there. David Sapp had a mini stroke. Dan Hoffman, husband of Sherry Hoffman, had a heart thing. I think he went home yesterday. But he was in the hospital. And Terry Rosengreen's in the hospital right now. Jessica Freeman was in the hospital but had a baby. But three of just real quick snapshots of tragedies that take place. On top of that, just by virtue of the prayer requests that we get in the life of this church, we have certainly people who have been announced tragic diseases in recent days. Some of them in this room right now, some of them not long ago. People who have been struck with bad news about all kinds of things and business failures, pink slips at work, things that we feel like we deserve. I did the funeral for a family this week. And we understand the tragedy and the loss that takes place in that. And the first thing that was asked of me was, things just didn't play out the way I had planned them to play out. He sat in my office and he asked, why did this happen? So the story of why and the questions that we ask around events like this have never, ever changed. Job's life was a real life. Now, it was built again on a play kind of a situation because you can see it happen. It's very poetic if you read through it. And there's the first two chapters talk about the bad events that take place, and then all of a sudden it's the unfolding of all of everybody else's advice to Job and his wife, and then Job's response, and then a friend, and Job's response, a friend, another friend, Job's response, back and forth, this dialogue goes on. Some of them get mad at Job, some of them get mad at God, some of them get mad at the world. Some of them, Job's trying to at first being nice, sometimes he's frustrated, but he's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And at the end of the book, this incredible thing that God has to say back to Job and says, let me tell you how it really is. I mean, he just sort of lays it out. You need to read this book if you haven't read it. Take some time to read it, but read it carefully and thoughtfully as you walk your way through this. And realizing, again, the poetic nature of it all, I described this a little bit like this morning in the first service. It's kind of fun, but if you've ever been to a Broadway play, right? You know, sometimes you can have a true story that's also written as a musical. And it might have been a true story, but it comes out in musical form. I went to one of those. I had the chance to go to New York a while back. And so for Patty's birthday, we went to see something that she wanted to go see, and that is the musical Beautiful, which is the life story of Carole King. And Carole King was my era. Folk singer, you know, grew up with her all my life, knew all of her music. And so it's the story of her life, you know, but it almost looks a little fake because it interjects all these great songs. And so when they come out with that song, "You make me feel like a natural woman," all of us guys in the whole room are blaring it out. All the older people are laughing at this. Young people are going, "What song are you talking about?" It's a great song, by the way. And all of us guys are singing it with great feeling. Now, you know, it's just a musical and it's just a play. It is a reflection of her life. In fact, the man who helped her write that song, in reality, died this last week. But which was her ex-husband. But the point is, we sometimes look at Job and think, well, it's not really real because it's sort of written in poetic play type fashion. It's not real. No, it's real. It's the real deal. And it brings up so many questions. But there is one great truth that I think comes out of all of this. And that is, I think, the book of Job and the story of the life of Job and the example of the life of Job, it teaches us many, many things of which we're not going to certainly cover this morning. But one of the great things of all of it is are you learning in the trials and in the complexities of life, no matter how it comes at you, are you learning true wisdom? We just get stuck with the question, why? We get stuck with the question of, I don't understand why this all happens. God, there's got to be a better reasoning here. And through it all, it doesn't really even answer all of the ins and out questions of the whys. But it does deal with the issue of wisdom. The wisdom of Job. The great, powerful lessons that we can learn. So what are life's great questions? Well, throughout all of humanity, we've always been asking questions. And I think the first question that we seem to always ask in life is, you know, in a sense, it's kind of like, are we really, is life just like a big game? Are we just pawns out there, and God and the devil are out there sitting there, you know, putting the pieces out there and saying, check, checkmate, you know, I got your, you know, I got your squire, I got your pawn, I got your whatever, you know, I got all, what? Obviously, I don't play chess very well. Whatever they are, all right, let's play checkers for a while. Let's play Risk, you know, let's do something else, but let's play Monopoly. But the, you know, why do we, are we, is that what life is? You know, we're just kind of getting moved around, and we don't have no say-so, and one moment we're here, and we think all things going, and then all of a sudden, God just sort of forces the hand, and we get, you know, taken, jumped, and thrown off the board. We lose half of our army, and then, you know, it doesn't make any sense. We thought we were doing all things right. Is God just messing around with all of us? You ever felt like God's messing around with your life? Honestly, if we were all really honest, I guarantee you, every one of us would sit there and say, oh no. I mean, in a cloudy moment, in a weak moment or whatever, I could promise you every one of us have sit there and thought, God, you're just messing with me. I don't deserve this. I might deserve some things. I might actually deserve, I understand cause and effect, but I there are some things that I might have earned, but I didn't earn this. I promise you, you're messing with me, aren't you? Or you're letting Satan mess in with me, and why aren't you intervening, God? Why aren't you jumping in the middle of this? I ask you to fix this problem. Are we just pawns in God's great cosmic game? You ever felt that way? Job kind of felt that way. Some, his friends, certainly felt like it was that way. Or, I think a lot of his friends later, and this is kind of advancing the story a bit, but I think we often ask the question, are bad circumstances a sign of the wrong on my part? In other words, am I receiving what I deserve? So the question really is, if something bad happens to me, if we follow that logic that's there, if something bad, I lose my job, I go to the doctor, like a friend of mine in Texas did the other day, went to the doctor, everything was fine. The doctor says, by the way, you have cancer. Okay? Some of us in this room have received that news, and others of us in the future will also receive that news. I hate to always point out the bad parts of life, but that's just a fact. And a friend of mine did, and he said his world just completely overnight, everything turned, everything changed, priorities shifted, you know, time schedule shifted, calendars changed, everything changed. It is a sign of something going wrong. We lose my job, we lose a parent in death, we get a disease, we, maybe it's not quite that dramatic, but maybe something that goes wrong in my life, even to the fact of I got a flat tire on my way to work and I'm late to an important business meeting. Are those things that happen to me bad a sign of the fact that I did something wrong? The entire world, for history of all of mankind, is often thought that way, which is exactly why we, as a human race, used to throw virgins in the volcano, right? Because we're having a famine, it hasn't rained in a while, somebody did something wrong, we've got to appease the gods. So we're going to take the most pure person we can think of, and we're going to toss that woman into the volcano. And if we can't get it done enough, we're going to find some more. Just keep tossing them until it finally starts raining again. Now that's an extreme version of this, but to be bluntly honest, I paint that out to you, but that's, in reality, we actually often still think on those same terms. We wouldn't go to that extreme. But we play little games like that all the time with God. If something has gone bad, there must be a reason. Now, we understand, again, the cause and effect, because we know from childhood that if I do something wrong, I get a spanking. I grew up raised that way. I remember distinctly, I'm the youngest of three boys, and one of my brothers would often steal toys from me. Okay? I'm playing with something, they take it from me. I go over there, I hit them, and then I tell Mom. She gives us both a spanking because he stole the toy and I tried to get revenge. We're both wrong. Wait a minute, I thought he's the one that stole the toy. But we start to learn the cause and effect kinds of stuff. You do something wrong, you get punished. So the logic of that, as we get into adulthood, grows the exact same way. right? If you do something wrong, you get a punishment from it. Now, some of us will say, yeah, that's right. Because we now know, right, that certain kind of lifestyle behaviors cause certain kinds of effects. You smoke too much, it can cause all kinds of problems. Some of you mind this room probably smoke, and we all know this. When I was in the 60s and the 50s, smoking was no problem, right? Until all of a sudden we learned that, oh, look at the problem there. We have to put warnings on the labels. We used to have cigarette commercials. Now we don't have cigarette commercials anymore. On and on and on. Because if you smoke too much, it's going to cause all kinds of health problems. And it does. Well, that's not the only one. But that's one of them. You don't exercise right, you get kind of a cause and effect. You know. So we understand the cause and effect kinds of things that come out. So it makes perfectly good sense to all of us that if something goes wrong in my life, there must have been something I did wrong. I ate too much gluten. God, my life has fallen apart because Panera Bread was calling me too much. Dear God, I know better. If I just quit those great pecan rolls at Panera, I know I'll get my job back, right? I love Panera, so no, this is no smack against Panera. So, but that's the way we think. You know, God, if you'll just rescue from me this, I promise, and Rich Long will never make this pledge, but I promise I'll never drink Starbucks coffee again. And Rich would say, don't go that far, right? I mean, we sort of make deals with God, right? God, if you'll do this for me, then God, then I'll promise I'll do this over here for you, or I'll quit doing this, or I'll add this to my agenda along the way. Life's great questions. Why do tests come? Why do bad things happen? The interesting thing about the story is there really isn't an answer to why bad things happen. It has this cosmic play that's out there. And honestly, I don't understand. I'll wait till Don Turner teaches on Job to fully understand the heavenly counsel thing between God and Satan. He'll fully explain it to us. But in the meanwhile, I will tell you that, this is human beings talking about how this all plays out. And we don't really understand it. No human being was standing there at this council when this was all written out like that. But I will tell you that somehow along the way, God certainly does oversee all this stuff and all know this kind of stuff along the way. And we don't really get an answer to why it happens. But we ultimately don't have to totally know why. You know why? That we don't have to know why? Because it's going to happen anyway. It's going to happen anyway. And the wisdom of Job is the response that we might have. The wisdom that we learn from Job is not trying to figure it all out, but how are you going to go back and deal with God? What are you going to do? So I have some simple conclusions for you this morning that I think in my own examination through just this part of the story of what I think I have learned that I think I can maybe help some of us learn, and that is this. The first one is this. Billy Arnold's little put together points. They're not scripture, but I do think they sort of ring out of the truth of this. And this was taught to me by my dear friend David Sapp, who is in the hospital. And as a small group a while back, one of our little group that I meet with him, and he was leading it one day, and we were actually doing a little study through the book of Job and telling the story. And Dave had what I thought was a classic on this. And he said, here's my whole analysis of the book of Job. And he said, get ready, guys. Here it is. Ready, ready, ready. And I think it ought to be good for you. God is God, and I am not. Let's all say it together. God is God, and I am not. And I thought, the whole room went, yeah, it's pretty much true. And in the book of Job, you'll find that to be true over and over again. Why? I'm not completely sure, but I do know this. God is God, and I am not. Wisdom is knowing that I am not in control. You cannot guide all of your path. In the book of Amos, there's this great story. I love Amos. He's this classic prophet of the Old Testament, and like a lot of the prophets, he was very descriptive in his storytelling and stuff. And he has this great little line in there where he's talking about how you try to get away from danger and get away from God and all that, what you think you can escape from. And he says, sometimes you live your life like this. You run out in the forest and you run into a lion. And you say, oh, there's a lion. He's going to eat me. So you start running. And you run away from the lion and you run into a bear. And you go, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm not sure which is better, but I'm out of here. So he's run. Now you're running from the bear and the lion. And good for you as you escape both. And you get into the comfort of your house. And you close the door behind you. And you think, I'm finally safe. I survived. And you put your hand on the wall. And a snake happens to be there. And he bites you in the arm. You ever feel like that in life? That is what life is sometimes. Are you in control? You're not. There are so many ins and outs of life that we're not in control of. And I'm not trying to depress you. I'm just trying to point out to you the fact, because there is a happy ending when you arrive at this conclusion. If you really think you are in control, you will end up in an unhappy conclusion. I promise. Because you are doing nothing but faking yourself and fooling yourself everywhere along the way. When this happened in the first chapter of Job and Job's story, he turned around. He didn't turn around and say, why me, God? What do you think you're doing? I've been sacrificing constantly, not only for me, but for my children. You know what he did? He was in deep sorrow, but he praised God's name. That unbelievable. God, you know what? I came into this world with nothing. And when I leave, I got nothing. And folks, I've done a lot of funerals. Don, you've done a lot of funerals. And I don't remember any of them taking anything with them. My father did over 2,000 funerals in his time. And he did funerals for rich people. And he did funerals for poor people. He did a funeral, my father did a funeral one time many, many years ago, back in the 50s, for an unnamed person, and nobody showed up because he was found in the Gulf of Mexico, drowned, couldn't identify him, and it was my dad and a funeral director who sat and presided over that man's grave. Didn't know his name, couldn't ever identify him, and they finally decided to bury him. They needed to bury him. Or you could be buried with your name engraved on a great big monument stone, with a great big thing of life and a dash out there, and you can have it all out there. But here's the deal. Neither one of you take anything with you. You're not ultimately in control. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try to do some things in life. It doesn't mean you shouldn't try to line out your life. I'm certainly not saying don't organize your life, because there is plenty of room out there to say, I need to line up some things and I want to pay attention to the details and I would like to forecast the future. I would like to do as best I could. I'd like to watch the S&P in the stock market reports, and I want to watch interest rates, and I want to make good guesses along the way, and boy, I sure want to make good business decisions, and man, I want to make good marriage decisions. And absolutely nobody's telling you to just fling it out to the wind and do whatever you want to, because God's in control of you. Because that's not what Job did, and that is not the message of Scripture. But here's the end of the day. In the end of the day, you really are not in control. God is God, and I am not. And neither are you. Second one. Our circumstances and our consequences need to lead us to dependence. It's a line that we've been using for a long time around here. And Don used this line a long time ago. It's a great line. We've been using it in our church a lot. And that is, we call it instead of when we come to faith in Christ, we don't say we are now a declaration of independence, which is how we, you know, do as Americans, as Westerners. We want to be more and more independent. The truth is, a follower of Christ learns to become more what? Dependent. We are declaring our complete dependence, and every day our dependence needs to grow, not shrink. Oh God, I got this all figured out. I'm on my own now. That's exactly why Jesus, when he met with the disciples one day, he told them, he says, you know, the rich people out here, And he wasn't criticizing wealth, but he was criticizing this subject of dependence versus independence. A rich man, it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of an eagle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Why did he say that? Because he says, typically the human nature, the human soul, the makeup of the sinful people that we really are, is that when we become more prosperous and we surround ourselves with more things, more stuff, more luxuries, more things that we get good at, that after a while we say, God, I don't really need you anymore. I don't need anything to do with you anymore. And now there's a car out in the parking lot that's telling us something. But God, we don't need any of that anymore. And God says that is completely contrary to a life of faith, to a person who says, God, everything I have is yours. Job was one wealthy dude. And in the end of the story, you're going to find out at the very end of the book, he actually got his wealth back. But he was one humanly wealthy dude. And in the end of it, when he lost it all, he said, God, I came with nothing. I'm leaving with nothing. Blessed be the name of the Lord. It's all yours. I declare these consequences and these circumstances that have driven me out of my normal comfort zone are now leading me to a greater life of dependence upon you. That is wisdom. That is solid theology. Not this junk out there that's taught about blessings from God means more stuff. And when you lose it, you must have done something wrong. Paul said this in Philippians chapter 4. He says, I know the secret of what it means to have something and have nothing. Have plenty, have nothing. Whether I be well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or want, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. Dependence. I have to learn that in my life if I'm going to learn true wisdom. Learning how to operate in this world, in this place, at this time, in this way, through the good and the bad, through the wilderness, as well as the prosperous times. The wisdom is, am I willing to always say, blessed be the name of the Lord. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Let me tell you the next point. The third one is this, is that the battles of this world are deeply spiritual in nature. They're far deeper than most of us would ever dream that they are. We often come into the middle of a battle of a marriage, or the middle of a battle of a job, or an employee, or a child. And we live in such an immature way and look at it in such a way that we look at it in such a surface level. If they would just correct their way, then my life would be easier. If this thing would just get fixed this way, if the money issues would just get solved, then that is the solution to all my problems. We look at so shallow, the vast majority of us do, at real life issues. And Job is a story about real life issues. And the thing that screams out to me is that the battles of this world are not really ever going to be totally understood this side of heaven. The Apostle Paul writes it this way when he writes in Ephesians. Finally, brothers, be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. Even the Apostle Paul is talking about devil does scheme, and I really do believe that's true. We see it in the book of Job. We see it in the New Testament. I've seen it in my life. You are seeing it in your life too. And I'm not saying you're picking up every rock looking for a demon somewhere along the way, but I will tell you that the battles of this world are spiritual in nature. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but it's against rulers and authorities and powers of this dark world and against spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Ephesians chapter 6. You ever looked at your battles that way? I don't think you need to go around blaming it all that day. Well, you know, it's the devil. The devil made me do it. You know, what is that? Years ago, some TV show used to say that all the time. Devil made me do it. That's not where we're going with this. And we're not just kind of lightly passing it off as, well, devil's out doing his work, so I'm just kind of to go about my way. What I am saying is there's a deep-seated battle that's going on in the nature of this world. And it's a sin nature that came and crept into this world when we chose as a human race to go out and do things our own ways. And it has crept into every crevice and corner and crack of not only our personal physical lives, but every part of our relationships that we have, as well as the relationships between nations and the relationship between us and the bodies that we have and the diseases that we possess and all those kinds of things. And I'm not trying to dumb it down, but I'm telling you that it is a dark world out there. And when we start recognizing that, that should lead us up to this former point that we just made, and that is, God, I can't lean on anything else but you. I have to be totally dependent on you. Because the battles that I face in the fight, I want to get better at it. I want to get, you know, more efficient with my time and my talent and all those. Those are all really, 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 really good things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you need to understand it's a dark world and a dark battle. And sin has confused everything. The last point I want to make is this, and that is this, that God has designed us for a relationship with Him. God has designed each one of us for a relationship with Him. And God is on your side. Sometimes it may not feel like it. Sometimes in a depressing moment, in the middle of the night, it may feel like nobody cares about you. It may, you know, you may have had people who tell you, I don't care about you anymore. And you may walk away from that and feel this incredible sense of loneliness, an incredible sense of depression, of how you felt abandoned out there in this world. But I will tell you this, that God has designed your life as for a relationship with you and wants desperately to reach back out to you, to be a part of your life. And that has come to us through Jesus Christ. The greatest part of the entirety of the understanding of the Bible is we don't leave the story of Job just with the story of Job. We don't leave the story of tragedy, loss, and abandonment and horrific things taking place and tsunamis physically or spiritually or you know, whatever, in it, whatever way, figuratively. There, we press it on all the way through to the story of God reaching down to man through His relationship to us in Jesus Christ. Christ came to save the world. He came to touch your life. He came to be a part of you. God wants to be your friend so much that God so loved the world, He gives His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him will not perish, nor have to face total loneliness or sense of abandonment, but will come to eternal life. God designed us, you, for a relationship with the God of the universe. I love science. I actually am growing more and more with a greater love and appreciation for science, even though they are highly critical of God as a scientific community. But here's why. Because the grander they can understand some things about the universe, the greater my understanding of this incredible God out there, who has placed all of these things in place. And He did it so that He could have a relationship with us. He did not abandon Job. He's not going to abandon you. It's why King David, in the 23rd Psalm, a man who was wealthy by his own right, would say these words, "The Lord is my shepherd. I will not, shall not, cannot want. For He makes me lie down in green pastures, and He leads me beside quiet waters. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though there are times that I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and it looms over me, I will fear no evil because You, God, are with me. You comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my own enemies, and You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Because of that, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all of the days of my life, and I will live in the house of the Lord forever. Forever. I'm going to ask our worship team, would they please come up here? And I want them to sing you a song. If you know these words, you can sing along, but I want you to feel the prayer that is a part of this song. It's called Take Heart. Through any low moment, through any painful situation, through any circumstance of life that you may be facing, God still wants a relationship with you, and it's your only chance of life. Take heart, for your rescuer is here.